Hello and welcome to this bonus episode of the EMJ podcast, the second of two podcasts entitled Distal First, the Default Approach. Learn about the latest technical advancements in access and hemostasis. My name is Sue Saville, former medical correspondent at ITV News and now an independent health communications specialist. This medical education podcast has been supported by Merit Medical. To discuss the benefits and management of access for coronary and other procedures via the distal radial route, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Pavan Najran, who is clinical lead for interventional radiology at the Christie Hospital NHS Foundation Trust. Welcome, Dr. Pavan Najran.
Thank you very much for the invitation. Glad to be back for the second podcast.
So, Dr. Najran, we know that in recent years, the traditional method of access via the femoral artery and the groin was replaced with a new global standard of access via the radial artery and the wrist, with its benefits of reduced vascular complications or bleeding. And then in the first episode of these podcasts, you explained the advantages of moving to the newer distal radial method. And we heard how this means reaching the vessel via the distal branch of the artery in the dorsal part of the hand, that triangular area known as the anatomical snuffbox, great phrase, a relatively easy area to access, which allows you to get the sheath in towards the radial artery to perform those intravascular procedures. So to get us started, would you briefly recap then on the differences between the distal and the radial approaches?
Absolutely. So the traditional radial artery is on the radial side of the wrist, close to the palmar surface. Now, the advantage is that there are two main vessels which supply the hand, the ulnar artery and the radial artery, which means the chances of causing any ischemia on access is significantly less than going through a femoral approach. Now, the distal vessel is beyond that. So the radial artery bifurcates into two arteries, one that dips towards the thumb and supplies the majority of the thumb and the index finger, and a further vessel which navigates towards the dorsal surface of the hand, and that's the target vessel. In terms of the advantages, much lower risk of causing ischemia because you've gone beyond the bifurcation, and as we'll discuss later in the podcast, ergonomically far more better for the patient.
Do you want to go into that now? How ergonomically is it better for the patient? How does that work?
So if anyone's listening to the podcast, if you're able to just put your palm out in front of you, so the palm is facing the ceiling of the room, and try and hold that position for any significant amount of time, what's going to happen eventually is the brachioradialis, which is a muscle towards the elbow, is going to try and drag your thumb. So it's pointing towards the surface, towards the ceiling of the room. So naturally, your hand position is the thumb pointing towards the ceiling. Now, that's the position I have the patient's hand in when we're accessing the distal radial artery. Now, in the intervention oncology world, we have procedures which last a considerable amount of time. So anytime the patient has their hand out, so the palmar surface is facing the ceiling, it can become very uncomfortable. I had a patient actually last week who'd had a traditional radial procedure done previously, and the first thing she said was that she had quite a lot of pain in her shoulder and around the outside of her upper arm, and that's simply because her palmar surface was facing up towards the ceiling for a considerable amount of time. I then went on to do a relatively long procedure in a distal radial position, so the thumb is facing the ceiling, and she had no pain after the procedure in the shoulder region. So again, it just reiterates the benefit of having that natural ergonomic position.
So benefits for patients, any other benefits? What about for the clinicians themselves?
Yeah, the main benefit is that your hemostasis time is a lot shorter. So we are accessing a slightly smaller vessel in a more peripheral setting. So it means that if there's any bleeding or any complications, it's very visible. Your compression time is a little bit shorter than it would be for a traditional radial approach. You're not worried so much about ischemia. So there is that misconception, sometimes is valid, sometimes is not, that access in the radial artery may result in some element of ischemia to the hand. If you're puncturing that distal vessel, that worry is eliminated because you've gone beyond the bifurcation. So there is already a patent vessel in the palmar area. So in terms of benefits to clinicians, you don't have to worry about ischemia, your compression time of the vessel is a lot shorter. So it means a patient's able to be discharged a lot quicker. And you can add in that ergonomic benefit to the patient. So they don't have that discomfort after the procedures. You don't have to worry too much about ensuring they have adequate analgesia because they'll be simply far more comfortable afterwards.
So the way you describe it seems a clear win. Why wouldn't you go in with this approach? But what then holds people back? What about any myths or misconceptions that perhaps mean that some of your colleagues are a little bit concerned? How do you address those?
I think any time we introduce something new in medicine, there's always that resistance simply because you are changing things. If clinicians are happy with the way they do things currently, then there has to be a significant reason as to why to change it. So a radial access method, for example, is well established in the cardiology setting, probably not as much in the radiology setting, but certainly cardiology setting. So it is a little bit difficult to convince clinicians to move into a slightly different method. Having said that, it's relatively easy to transfer the skills that clinicians have learned to use a radial access method into a distal radial access with clear benefits. I think the key within the medical field is to display the benefits. And I think for the distal radial method, there are two main things. Number one, it's far more comfortable for patients. And number two, it's a little bit safer than it is for a traditional radial method. It does require slightly more work in terms of preparation, but after time and after experience, that time is significantly reduced and it again becomes second nature, similar to when we converted from a femoral method to a radial method. So ultrasound access, for example, is something that I would recommend for a distal radial approach. And that's simply because you'd be able to target the vessel directly in the 12 o'clock position when you're looking at the vessel in a transverse method. And that will reduce the risk of causing any subintimal cannulation or any damage to the vessel. That, again, can be used in a traditional radial method as well. And it'll make a radial method far safer and far better and reduce the risk of causing any damage to that vessel.
And you mentioned there about a little bit more work, taking a little bit more time. What about that concern that time is myocardium? What's that about? How can you address that?
Yeah, so in the cardiologist setting, there is a lot of emergency procedures that are performed, particularly with primary PCI. And any time we, the cardiologist, need to take a patient for a stent, for example, the time is myocardium. So accessing the vessel needs to be as quick as possible and easy as possible. Now, some would argue that you're changing from a radial method to a distal method, which may require an addition of an ultrasound-guided access. Now, or what I would say to that is that you are dealing with patients who are on numerous anticoagulants. Anytime a patient has an acute coronary event, they have to be on quite considerable amounts of blood thinners, which means you have to think about risks of bleeding after the procedure, risks are associated with hemostasis afterwards as well. So if you get your access right in the safest possible way, you don't have to worry about that after the procedure. So if you access a smaller vessel, i.e. going from a radial to a distal vessel, reducing your hemostasis time, you don't need to worry about that. Yeah, and we talk about preparation time. So the preparation time is slightly longer at the beginning. Anytime we adapt to a new method, there is a learning curve. So for example, introducing an ultrasound guided access, there is going to be a little bit of a learning curve, but these are transferable skills. Throughout medicine, we all learn image guided access, particularly when we're doing procedural work, and cardiologists and radiologists both do that. So by transferring those skills into accessing the vessel quickly, I think in the long run would make the procedure shorter. So for example, traditionally cardiologists palpate the radial artery, then access the vessel. But if you can use image guidance, you know you can access the vessel instantly. Sometimes cardiologists may struggle to get into the vessel if it's a vessel they can't palpate properly. And actually having the ability to use ultrasound in the long run will make your procedure a lot quicker and you'll be able to access more difficult vessels. So I think although the learning curve is slightly steep at the beginning and it may make procedures slightly longer at the beginning, in the long run, you'll be more skilled because you'll have that ability to use ultrasound. you'd be able to access more difficult vessels, whereas before you may have had a couple of attempts to access the vessel, and the chances of causing any damage to that vessel significantly less because you've accessed it appropriately the first time.
And you touched there on the different specialties, cardiologists and so on. How do you as a radiologist then bring on board the different clinical colleagues from different healthcare professional roles and persuade them then to upskill and to take those transferable skills and apply them to this new technique?
Well, I'm actually married to a cardiologist, so I can discuss that over dinner with my wife. But I think actually having that relationship with my wife and being married to a cardiologist, you get an insight into the mindset of different specialties. And I think as a radiologist, you are always always taught about image guided access. Everything is image guided, and that's just based on the nature of our specialty. So using an ultrasound guided access to get into a vessel is something we wouldn't think twice about, and which means that going from femoral radial to distal is all relatively straightforward, simply because we've been taught to use ultrasound from the beginning to access anything. Whereas I think with the cardiologist, it may require a slight tilt to introduce that additive method of accessing vessels. But once you have introduced that and once they've taken it on board, actually, it makes their procedure a lot quicker and easier. And they don't have as much anxiety in approaching far more complex cases. I think now medicine itself is moving towards image-guided access. Whether you're a radiologist or a cardiologist or any other specialty, everyone has access to an ultrasound machine. ITU specialists, for example, will always use ultrasound to gain access to jugular veins, to put in lines, for example. So introducing an ultrasound-guided method for access in the cardiac cath lab is actually nothing really significant, and they're taking it on board, which means distal radial access is something that actually can be introduced relatively easily.
So over your dinner at home, then, you have this healthy professional rivalry to discuss these issues. And I'm wondering if it's not just about persuading them, as you were saying earlier, about displaying the benefits, but perhaps is it a mindset shift that's required in order to take on board an innovative approach?
Not at all. I think I think the cardiologists are the ones who introduced radial access in the first place, and it's been a fantastic introduction in the radiology field for sure. And I think the distal radial access just adds that slight additive benefit to a radial access, in the sense that it's far more comfortable for patients. And I think for cardiologists in particular, it's the hemostasis which is going to be more important. So their patients are heavily anticoagulated, particularly if they've had an acute MI, which means there's always that worry about bleeding after the procedure. Are they going to be able to ensure they've got good hemostasis around the wrist? With a distal radial access, you can just reduce that risk ever so slightly, making it far, far safer after the procedure as well. So I think for cardiologists in particular, there is significant benefit in terms of the sort of more elective field in cardiology. The benefit is that the hemostasis time is a bit shorter, which means, again, there's an additive benefit of getting more patients done on a morning list, for example. If you've got a slightly quicker hemostasis time after the procedure, you don't have to worry so much about bleeding afterwards.
And that's going to be a key thing, isn't it, in terms of pressures on the healthcare system? Oh, and what about
Absolutely.
From the nursing management side of it, for the compression device? How does that differ in the distal radial procedure?
There are slight differences. So in terms of the hemostasis time, for example, in my practice, we've introduced a rapid deflation protocol, which means we can actually have the compression device removed within half an hour after the procedure, which is a significant benefit to nursing management afterwards. Now, the nursing management afterwards is divided into two things, really. First of all, it's within the cath lab itself. So how do we actually manage the device while the patient's being prepared to be transferred to the ward? Now, in a traditional radial method, the patient's compression device is normally still on, even when they're transferred to the ward. Now, with the distal radial method, in some cases that compression device is removed simply because it's been well over half an hour since the procedure's finished. And we, as anyone who's worked in a hospital who's listening to this podcast knows, that it's a significant amount of time before the patient's actually transferred to the ward. Now, if you've already got your compression device removed, you don't have that worry about having issues on the ward with the compression device if the patient's already had patent hemostasis and everything's absolutely fine. So that, in terms of nursing care, your nursing care is reduced with the distal radial method simply because you may have actually had the device removed before the patient's even gone to the ward. And even if they have still got the device in situ, the compression time is significantly less. So it means that your nursing time on the patient is reduced.
And in the first podcast, you walked us through how you go about this procedure itself. What about the preparation beforehand? You touched on it taking a little bit longer, but how do you prepare both the patient and your equipment? And what sort of special techniques and medicines are you using for this procedure?
So I actually prepare the patient by just doing a quick ultrasound. Again, in the intervention oncology world, the patient may have had several procedures through the wrist before. So there is always the important pre-ultrasound requirement, simply because we want to ensure the patient doesn't have a thrombus within the radial artery. If that's all absolutely fine, I then prepare the patient in terms of positioning. So again, having the thumb facing the ceiling, I then put a small drape just to open up the anatomical snuff box, just pushing the thumb away from the rest of the hand. And again, ensuring it's comfortable for the patient. So I just put something underneath the wrist just to make sure there's a comfortable position during the procedure, because again, they're going to be in that position for a considerable amount of time. I then give a mixture of local anesthetic and GTN subcutaneously around the vessel under ultrasound guidance. Now, it's important that's done very carefully, because if we can infiltrate that directly around the vessel, you will dilate the vessel. I'm currently performing a trial at my hospital looking at how much we can actually dilate the vessel up. The more dilated the vessel is, the more likely you are to have a very good central access when you go to puncture the vessel. Once I've done that, I then go and prepare for the rest of the procedure. So that just gives time for the GTN local anesthetic to work. Otherwise, as we all know, as interventional radiologists, we're rather impatient and we just want to crack on with things. So if I've got something to do, which is normally arrange my trolley, get my equipment ready, it just moves me away from the access point. So a couple of minutes is more than enough. At that point, I then use an ultrasound and puncture the vessel in the 12 o'clock position in a transverse method. That ensures I'm in the middle of the vessel and I'm not gone subintimal, for example. And then you can do a quick ultrasound just to ensure your wires in the lumen of the vessel, and then go on to put the sheath in.
And you mentioned earlier about this method being safer. What evidence do you have that it is safe and effective? Are there trials or data for this?
Yes, there's a numerous trials, particularly in the cardiology field, simply because the number of procedures cardiologists do is significantly greater than the radiology field. There is a group in Canada who are looking at this as well in terms of the radiology field, and we're doing a trial at the Christie Hospital looking at how much we can actually dilate the vessel. In terms of safety, I think that's been conclusively proven in numerous previous trials, particularly within the cardiology setting. In my own experience, we've had no significant morbidity associated with distal radial access or with radial access in the interventional oncology field. So there is supportive evidence for that. And then we can move away from the actual mortality morbidity evidence, but actually the patient experience evidence. And again, that's something that's wholly supportive of radial and distal radial access. Again, with distal radial access, is something that's now trickling through in terms of evidence to show that there's significant benefit in terms of during the procedure, in terms of comfort, and particularly post-procedure. So in addition to that, I have my own experience. So I actually had a radial access procedure performed for a cardiac issue, and I can tell you that actually it was relatively straightforward in having a radial procedure performed. Now, after the procedure, I had a traditional compression band on my wrist, and the one thing I did feel was quite a lot of pain afterwards in moving my fingers. And that's simply because of the compression around the wrist itself. So I had a traditional radial procedure performed. And then what I did is I put the compression band around the distal radial artery much later down the line just to see what it felt like. And that pain I felt around the wrist was not evident when I put the distal radial band on. And it's simply because when I had the compression device around the wrist, I was compressing the median nerve quite significantly. So simple things like picking up a cup or using my mobile phone was quite difficult. Whereas with the distal radial band on, it was quite easy to do that because I wasn't compressing the median nerve. So when I felt this, I then started asking my patients how they felt after the procedure. And I noticed with the distal method, patients were able to use their mobile phone, even use a pencil or a pen to write something down, or even pick up a cup to have something to drink. Whereas those who had the traditional radial method have found that quite difficult. And again, it's because if you compress your wrist for a considerable amount of time, you are compressing the nerve, the median nerve, which can be quite uncomfortable. And again, this is anecdotal. This is me asking patients and my own experience, but it's something that's quite powerful.
It is indeed. It's real world evidence right on the front line. You're not only getting your clinical professional experience, but also that personal experience of having gone through that. And it's really interesting to hear then how you play that into understanding the issues around comfort and even the practical things then about picking up your phone again. I think that's really fascinating. Any other feedback from patients that you get, perhaps things that help you address and tweak how you might go about the procedure?
I actually think it's positioning during the procedure, and being a clinician, it's really easy to forget that you are performing a procedure on a patient and it's a considerable amount of time. And that's simply because you're concentrating on what you're trying to do. And you forget sometimes to look down at the hand and see the position of the hand and whether it's comfortable for the patient. And again, I go back to a case probably a couple of weeks ago now where I was doing a liver embolization. It was a relatively long procedure and I did a traditional distal radial method. And I noticed the patient was just tweaking the hand slightly. And because we hadn't got certain equipment in place, I had to just put the patient's hand in a more palmar position, which is your traditional radial position, and the hand was drifting off into the distal radial position. And halfway through, I asked the patient, is everything okay? And they just started to complain of shoulder pain and a little bit discomfort in the back. And then that resulted in more discomfort in the back. And then they started to wiggle around on the table, and all because the hand was in a palmar position. Now, what I did after that is then we looked into different equipment we could acquire to try and keep the patient's hand in a distal radial position. And we found a specifically designed little device which holds the patient's hand in a distal radial position, i.e. with the thumb facing the ceiling. And that has eliminated any of this discomfort that particular patient felt. So it's little things like positioning of the hand which can actually make a big difference, not only for the procedure itself, but significantly for the patient.
And that's really interesting. Are there other conditions that patients might have? For instance, I know elderly people with arthritis in the shoulders, or perhaps people have had other complications that you have to take into account when you're going ahead with this.
Yes. So again, I'm in an interventional oncology setting. So unfortunately, a lot of my patients have metastasis, particularly around the spine. So lying flat for any considerable amount of time can be quite uncomfortable for the patients. We've actually done a procedure where I've accessed the radial artery with the patient sat up in a 90 degree position, using ultrasound guidance and using a flora machine, which can actually be rotated in a 90 degree position. We then went on to transfer the patient in a flat position and then proceeded to perform the embolization. So now with a radial method, that's impossible, even simply because the way we've had to lay the palmar hand out, that wouldn't be possible in a 90 degree position. But with a distal radial approach, you move the hand into a traditional position. So we're able to do that. So that's a more extreme example. But generally with patients in the interventional oncology setting, you have to think slightly out of the box, simply because these patients have multifactorial issues, and a lot of them with distal mets, particularly within the spine or in the musculoskeletal system, lying flat or in a slightly uncomfortable position is amplified versus the rest of us.
And with what you've outlined across these two podcasts, then, do you now see this distal radial method perhaps becoming the new gold standard for all the advantages you've described?
Yeah, I mean, we always go with a distal radial method first approach. So the first thing we would try is a distal radial method, and it's successful the majority of the time. But for every reason, you still have the radial access available. So even if you're not able to get into the distal vessel, the beauty is the radial artery is still available. If you go straight for a radial method and there is an issue, a puncture, or you've caused a slight dissection or a little bit of a bleed, then you'll have to revert to a femoral method. So the beauty of distal is you've still got the radial in the bag.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pavan Najran. You've given us professional and personal insights into this method. It's been really fascinating discussing this with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And thank you to the audience for listening. And remember, you can listen back to part one of this podcast on emjreviews.com, where you can also find a wealth of other podcasts on a variety of topics. A new podcast is released every Friday with bonus editions like this one added in. Well, from me, Sue Saville, it's been my pleasure to guide the conversation. Goodbye for now.